In the late 80s and early 90s, the local music scene in Lexington was arguably at its peak. Legendary acts like Black Cat Bone, 10 Foot Pole, The Catawampus Universe, 9 Pound Hammer, and Groovezilla, just to name a few, regularly drew huge audiences. Punk, ska, grunge, and metal were no longer underground forms of music. These genres were exploding nationwide, and here in Lexington, one club was at the center of it all. It was a gritty, sweaty hole in the wall with cheap beer and a huge sound system. Legendary acts like Soundgarden, Smashing Pumpkins, The Replacements, Fugazi, and many others performed on this stage on their way to stardom. And every local rock band in the city wanted to play there. Of course, I am talking about the legendary Rockledge. And I'm honored to have the owner of this iconic club as the first guest on this show. Please welcome to the 859 Rewind, Mr. David Butler.
Well, thank you very much, Lee. I'm thrilled to be here.
Are you really?
Yeah, I actually am.
I really appreciate you coming out here. How old were you when you opened up the Rockledge?
Oh, gosh. Let's see. I was 26 when we opened.
The name Rockledge, where did that come from?
Well, I was in a band at the time called Rebel Without a Cause, and we had recorded in a studio called Reel to Reel in Louisville. And right around the corner from that studio, it was in a guy's house, a guy named Jeff Carpenter. There was Rockledge Avenue.
Yes.
And I saw that, and I was like, that's the coolest word, and it just kind of stuck in my head.
See, I've often wondered that because, take a trip to Louisville. It's right off Bardstown Road, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I see the Rockledge Avenue, and I wonder which came first, the chicken or the egg. Did they name that street after your club, or, I don't know.
Yeah, so the club was named after the street.
So what was that like? What was it, 1988,
Yeah, we opened in the fall of 88.
And what was that like for you? Like, what was going on in your mind? What was happening at the time? Why did you open the club?
Yeah, well, I was trying to be a rock star like lots of other misguided people.
Sure.
And I was bartending at a bar called The Bottom Line that was in that same location. And so The Bottom Line kind of closed sort of abruptly. And so a couple of the other bartenders, we got together and decided to reopen it. One guy was super enthusiastic about it, and he sort of talked me and the other fella into doing it. We were a little hesitant about
right?
it
yeah.
at first.
I mean, it seems like for a 26-year-old kid, that's like a scary thing to do, just to open up a club. And especially, why was it just music that you loved? Why was it like a live music venue? Why did you decide on that?
I loved seeing bands, and I love seeing local bands especially.
Right.
And so the Bottom Line was just a great place, and we had a lot of friends there, and we thought, well, if it's not here anymore, yeah, maybe we can do this, and maybe we can improve on it and make it better than the previous owners. And I don't know if we did that, but
I think you probably did.
Yeah.
I don't know about The Bottom Line. Never heard of that. So
yeah.
The Rockledge, you definitely did. I remember one time I was in Atlanta, Georgia, during those days, like back in the 90s.
Yeah.
And I was at a guitar store and chatting up one of the employees. And he said, "Where are you from?" And I said, "Lexington, Kentucky." And he went, "Oh, the Rockledge." That was it. That's how people, musicians in other cities, knew about Lexington.
Yeah.
The Rockledge. And I think over the years, the legend of the Rockledge has grown maybe bigger than it ever was when it was an actual active live place. It's like when you talk to people, they all have memories of all these bands, like I mentioned in the intro, these bands that played at the Rockledge. And the more people you talk to, the more it gets like, wait, that can't be right. Like, people are like, oh, yeah, the Beatles reunited there one time. I want to read you a list of bands that I've heard people say have played at the Rockledge. I've never seen them. You tell me. We'll go through this list. You tell me if they actually played there or not.
Okay.
And if you have any memories of these shows, I would love to hear them.
Okay. Yeah.
It was started out with the biggest one, Soundgarden.
Yeah, they did play there. And I think they had just, like I booked them before, right before they got huge.
Right.
So they were big enough to have a tour bus at the time, and they were, just about to really take off. I mean, they were a big band, certainly by our standards, but they, you know, they were right on the verge. And that may have been a WRFL show, actually, because a lot of the big shows at the Rockledge were booked by WRFL. But anyway, they broke a mic stand, and I got the honor of going on their bus and asking the tour manager for $20 to replace the mic stand or the mic or whatever it was.
Wow.
And he was happy to shell out $20.
Do you remember, specifically, Chris Cornell, was he, what kind of guy he was? Was he a nice guy? Were they all nice guys?
You know, as far as I can remember, they were all very nice. I was probably bartending that night. And just, you know.
It's just crazy to me.
Yeah.
All right, Smashing Pumpkins.
I think the Smashing Pumpkins were going to play and had to cancel.
Okay.
So that's one of those things. That's a gray area.
Right.
And I tried to find all of my calendar books where I booked the bands, you know, so I'd have a little encyclopedia here and we could look through it. I couldn't find them. So I'm sure that somebody must have broken into my house and taken all of them.
Oh, that sucks. Fugazi.
Yeah, Fugazi did play there.
Flaming Lips.
Yes, two or three times.
Really?
Yeah. And the first time the Flaming Lips played, they came in and they started unloading and they looked around and they looked at the breaker box and they were like, this is not enough electricity. And they just proceeded to hook into the line that was coming off of the pole before it went into the breaker box. And they assured me, oh, it'll be fine, you know. And I was kind of terrified.
Yeah, that's crazy stuff. But nothing bad. They didn't blow any fuses. No blackouts in Lexington.
No.
Goo Goo Dolls.
Yeah. Goo Goo Dolls played, I think, twice.
I've been told the Goo Goo Dolls, before they became the Goo Goo Dolls that we all know and hate, that they were actually a punk rock band. Is that?
Yeah, they were. Okay. And they were great guys.
That's cool. Lemonheads?
Yeah. That was definitely an RFL show.
Okay. The Jesus Lizard.
I'm less sure about that.
Okay.
Probably.
The Replacements?
Yes, absolutely.
Really?
Yeah. That was terrifying. Because we had a – they're one of my favorite bands ever. And so this promoter from Nashville came in and talked to us. And the Replacements were out with Tom Petty. And they had a couple nights off, and this promoter was trying to book them in some clubs. And he came in and said, you know, what's your capacity? And we told him, and then he kind of sold however many tickets he wanted to, you know. And
right.
So it was just packed.
Oh, you just packed,
It was kind of scary. And but we survived. Everybody survived. It was a great show.
Fantastic. the last one I've got on this list, which is, I find hard to believe, Primus?
Yeah.
Primus played there?
They played, unreal. I think, to about four people, and they cooked their dinner on a camp stove before they went on.
Wow.
In the club.
See, how does that make you feel? When you think about, okay, the Replacements, that was a huge, but Primus eventually, Soundgarden eventually, they became huge.
Yeah.
You're booking them when they were nobodies. Tell me your feelings about that.
I mean, that feels great to, you know, I think we did something significant in Lexington. And I do have to give a lot of credit to Khaki Urch and everybody at WRFL because they were responsible for bringing a lot of those fantastic bands. And often it would be their birthday party week.
Like the RFL birthday party.
Yeah, so they would book all these bands.
Sure.
And that was so awesome. And so I can't take credit for all of them, but, you know, having the place where they played was amazing.
You never felt a little bit, tiny little tinge of resentment when they got huge? Oh, man, this is my band. I broke this band, you know?
No, because, I mean, it's always fun to tell people that that Primus played. Yeah. Oh, played my ratty.
That's
club.
It's incredible. Now, yeah. Speaking of four people, my band played at your club.
Yeah.
A few times, handful of times. At that time, we were called. I hate to even say it, it's so stupid. We were called Miss Nelson is Missing.
Right.
And then eventually we changed our name to The Down. And we had a tiny bit of success in Lexington only.
Yeah.
But when we were MNIM, we were booked to play with, to open the show for Better Than Ezra. You remember Better Than Ezra? They had the hit, It Was Good Living With You, uh-oh.
Yeah.
And we got a call that morning, and I think it was from Larry Treadway.
Right.
Who he was your booking guy maybe for a little while.
Yeah.
And he said, the band who's playing tonight, they don't want any local bands on the bill. So I'm sorry, but you can't play tonight.
Okay.
And everybody in my band they were furious.
Sure.
But I was like, oh, I'm not like that. I want to see, you know, what's the big deal about? And I go down and I see Better Than Ezra. And the band that opened for them that we didn't get to play was Dishwalla. They had the, tell me all your thoughts on
her. Oh,
God,
okay.
Because
right.
I'd really like to meet her. And there were four people there. There was me, these two girls, and like one random dude. And I remember after the show, the lead singer of Better Than Ezra came down. He was talking to the two girls who I was also talking to. And I told him, my band was supposed to play tonight, but you wouldn't let me. And he was like, oh, man, I'm really sorry. You know, like, yeah, I'm sure the band didn't have anything to do with it.
Right.
You know? And he was like, he says, I guess if you guys had played there, there'd been some people here tonight. I'm like, oh, hell yeah, we'd have packed the place. But it was a total lie. There would have been three more people there, me and the three guys in my band. We wouldn't have brought anybody down there. We were a Wednesday night band, you know.
Yeah.
So, but that's my memory of you know, that almost got a little taste of that. You know, Better Than Ezra turned out to be a pretty good band. And who else do you remember? Like, what are some highlights from your memory, like, who played at the Rockledge? What shows really stand out to you?
Well, let's see. Shortly after we opened, we kind of had this big, a bunch of local bands played. And Velvet Elvis had their major label at that time,
right.
And they were coming through. They were on tour. So they played with, I think, probably the Blueberries and some other bands. And that was just a huge night. And it was kind of, in a way, it was sort of like a grand opening. So really some of my favorite nights were the nights when local bands played and had the place packed.
Like right.
10-foot pole, Blueberries. I really loved the Resurrected Bloated Floaters and some of Lawrence Tarpey's other bands. Two Small Bodies. And, you know, it was just cool when local bands are playing to their friends and everybody's really into it.
Sure, and, sure.
And there's not as much ego as there is sometimes when you have a touring band and they come in with their road cases and,
right.
You know. And but let's see, we had Webb Wilder several times. He was fantastic. Jason and the Scorchers. Oh, my gosh. So many of them.
Do you remember any of the really wild nights that went on there? Do you have any stories that you want to share about that? Or is it we're not governed by the FCC on a podcast. So, I mean, if there's anything you want to.
Yeah, let's see. Have you heard of Skullhead?
Local band? Of course I have, yes.
So every time Skullhead played was insanity. And they were great. I loved them playing, but it was also a little scary sometimes, you know, just from a liability perspective, you know. And
I can tell you that the first and last time that I ever got in the mosh pit was at a Skullhead show at the Rockledge.
Yeah.
And Will Parker, their lead singer, jumped off the stage feet first and kicked me right in the face.
Oh, man.
And you never saw a whole mosh pit stop moshing before. Everyone stopped.
Yeah.
And looked and went, oh, my God, are you okay?
Yeah.
And fortunately for me, his boot grazed my cheek and kind of glanced off of it and just left this big muddy streak across my – and I was never moshed again.
Yeah.
But Skullhead, they were out of control.
And they would do things like you know, before Will was the lead singer, there was a guy, Sean McSorley, And I think he's still around, and he's kind of a short guy and just hilarious, and he was just insane. And one night, he ran up to the second floor, and he went out one of the windows, and he was dancing around on the awning on the front of the building. And, well, I don't know if he was dancing or what he was doing, but the police drove by, and they were like, does he belong to you? You better, you know, get him under control. And so he was kind of crazy. And then sometimes Skullhead would, like, stack up, like, 40 old televisions on the stage, and they're kind of all teetering, you know, as the band is pounding away. Let's see, other good examples of big shows, Black Cat Bone, 9-Pound Hammer.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah,
still rocking. I'm sure I saw 9-Pound Hammer last Saturday.
Yeah,
they're fantastic.
They are rock stars.
Yeah, it's a funny cliche when you hear a band go, "Oh, we're huge in Europe." No, they really are huge in Europe. They're rock stars over there. It's crazy.
Yeah.
My memory of one of the wildest things that happened at the Rockledge, I wasn't old enough to get in at that time. Sebastian Bach from Skid Row.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah.
I think Skullhead was involved.
Yeah, Skullhead was.
Now, there were rooms above the Rockledge where bands would rehearse.
Yeah.
Did you own that as well? Or?
Well, we rented the whole
building.
You
rented that, yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm like 17 maybe, and I'm trying to look in the window of the front door to catch a glimpse of my hero, Sebastian Bach from Skid Row.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes out of that door that's next to the front door that led upstairs.
Yeah.
And he's with Will Parker from Skullhead, who I knew because I think he dated my sister.
Okay.
I'm not sure. Anyway.
And he kicked you in the head.
And he kicked me in the face. And I couldn't believe that I was standing right next to Sebastian Bach, Youth Gone Wild. And I was like, "Hey, Baz." And I reached out, and he really friendly shook my hand. And he goes, "Hey, how you doing?"
Yeah.
And I was like, "I'm great." And he, like, starts to walk into the club, and he won't let go of my hand. And I don't know what they were doing upstairs, but he was in an extra good mood.
Oh, okay.
And he was pulling me into the club, and he was winking at me, and he just kept going, "How you doing? How you doing?" I was like, "Let me go. Please let me go. I'm too young. I can't go in there, you know." And he did, and he let me go. And I don't know what happened. You know, I heard that was like one of the most belligerent nights of all time.
Yeah, that was a crazy show.
Yeah. That's crazy. What do you think about now when you go down Short Street and you look and you see like a Mexican restaurant there? Does it make you sad?
No, I mean, I wish the place was still open. I don't wish that I was still in charge of it.
Right.
But I think, you know, there are some awesome clubs in town now.
Sure.
The Burl, for one.
Manchester Music Hall.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good places to still. If you seek it out, you can find it. There was a really magical time, though, in Lexington. You know, you had the Rockledge, you had JDI's. Right?
Yeah.
And Linus Music Emporium.
Right.
And they had all kinds of great shows there. What was your relationship like with the other clubs in town?
It was good.
Yeah.
And there was also the Thrash Can and Babylon, like the same location, but two different bars
right.
in that same location. I think that was on Limestone. So yeah, it was good. I don't think there were any huge rivalries or anything.
It was such a great time, not just in Lexington, but nationwide, you know, the early 90s, where music, live music, became not an underground thing anymore, right?
Yeah.
It became mainstream. Grunge, you know, that whole Seattle thing, like, broke it open, and, like, runway models wearing flannel shirts and stuff.
Right.
And it was just like, and it permeated the whole country. And, like, I know, Boise, Idaho had a huge music scene. Like, it's just, like, all these random cities, right?
Yeah.
And Lexington, you know, we mentioned a lot. And I want to play some clips now. Let's hear a little bit of The Blueberries. I'm going to go with track one off of their album Museum called All Mrs. Right. Shame.
Down. I'm always someone's certain clown. So I'll be waiting for the moment.
Okay, that was Mrs. Shame by the Blueberries. And if you want to hear that entire song, you can go to our website, which is 859rewind.com, and click on the link there and just play it. Dave, why did you pick that?
I just love their music. You know, I think I have some of the same, probably the same favorite influences that they have.
Right.
And it's just, the lyrics are great. And I don't know, I'm not coming up with very specific words for it. It's just kind of a feel-good thing.
They're a great band.
Really good rhythm, and I liked them a lot.
Well, tell me about your band. Tell me about Strangle Martin.
Strangle Martin was probably definitely rougher than the Blueberries.
Yeah.
You know, we were a little more punk rock, a little noisier, maybe not quite as talented. but we had a lot of fun. We were a three-piece mostly, most of the time. And I guess our influences were maybe the Pixies and the Replacements. And I don't know that we sound like either of those bands, but that's kind of what we aspired to.
Sure, okay. I'm going to hear a little bit of Strangle Martin right here. Stop Interrupted Me by Strangle Martin, your band. Now, Dave, I want to ask you something. I feel weird about this. And I debated whether or not I should even bring it up. But about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I was at the Velvet Elvis reunion show.
Yeah.
Down at the Green Lantern Bar. And I saw my good friend, John McGee, who's the singer and tail dragger. And he was talking to somebody. And I interrupted and said, "Hey, man, I'm doing this podcast coming up to 859 Rewind, and, you know, I hope that you'll be on it someday." And he's like, "Oh, yeah, cool, whatever, man." You know, I say, I want to impress him, right? And I go, "The first guest on the show is going to be David Butler." And he looked, and the mood immediately changed. And he goes, "What band was David Butler in?" And I know he knows this, and I know he knows I know it, so I don't understand why he's saying this to me. And I go, "Strangle Martin." And he goes, "This is Martin." And he points to the guy he's talking to. And the guy looks at me and he says, "You tell David Butler if he's on your show, I will never be on your show." And they start laughing. And I'm like, I can't tell if they're joking or not.
Yeah.
And John McGee says, "Now you know why they called it Strangle Martin."
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, I'll tell him. So there, I told you. That was playful, right? Like, you guys are cool or no?
Oh, yeah, I am.
Okay. I think he was joking.
Yeah, I don't know. Martin's a little bit of a curmudgeon. Yeah, he kept coming up early on when we were getting together. He kept coming up with reasons to break up the band. And we were trying to find a name, and we were having disagreements about that and various other things. And finally, Martin and I had a frustrating conversation. I was like, "Why don't we call it Strangle Martin?" And he loved that.
It's great. That's a great name. And I mean, I had no idea that there was a member of the band named Martin until I met him a couple weeks ago. That's really cool.
Of course, he eventually quit and joined Ted Bundy's Volkswagen without telling us.
Oh, no.
We practiced upstairs from the Rockledge in the room next to where Ted Bundy's Volkswagen practiced.
Oh.
And, you know, one day we're up there and, like, our drummer's in the next room. Like, okay, this is how it is.
So, did you ever practice at the same time and, like, try to out-volume each other?
We could never have out-volumed
Ted Bundy's Volkswagen. Volkswagen. Yeah.
No.
That was a good band.
Yeah.
A good punk rock band. Boy, we're almost out of time, and I want to ask you about what you've got going on now. So to wrap up the Rockledge conversation, how did it end? What happened? It was 1996. Yeah.
Yeah. So I got married in 94, had my first child, my daughter, in 1996. I had gone back to school. I was in graduate school, and I was trying to keep this club going, too. And so, you know, I'd get home about 2 in the morning. Baby's got colic. I'm walking around with the baby trying to get her to sleep. And then I would go to classes at like 8 in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like falling asleep standing up. So
so it wasn't like a financial thing? Or
well, sure. I mean, it was not very lucrative.
Yeah.
You know.
You didn't get rich with the Rockledge?
I did not get rich. Yeah. No.
That might be surprising to people because here we are 30 years later and it's still everybody's favorite club. I mean, people who weren't even alive know about the Rockledge. So
yeah.
You know, that's interesting.
Well, it's tricky with a music club because, you know, you're paying the bills 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Right.
But, you know, people come to the show late. Some of my best patrons maybe sat in the parking lot and drank Milwaukee's Best in a can.
Right.
And then they would come in and drink quarter drafts. And then at that time, we had to close at 1, too. So, you know, we had like 3 or 4 solid nights, which is about 2 hours, 3 hours of making money. So it can just be hard to make ends meet. But like, that's why, you know, it's great that the Borough, they have so many things going on there.
Yeah, sure. And now they do those parking lot shows.
Yeah.
So they're not really constrained to the capacity of the inside of the club either. So that's brilliant by them. So now you've reformed your band from the early 80s, Rebel Without a Cause.
Yeah. Yeah. So we were a band, I guess we started in like 1982 when I was in college, you know, with my brother who was just learning to play drums and a friend from high school. And we just kind of kept going. We started playing a lot of parties. And we were trying to be an original band and we did like a 5-song EP. But at some point we broke up as bands do. So my fellow bandmates, like we all went our separate ways and I started Strangle Martin. John Herzog, who's a bass player, he joined Two Small Bodies. And Billy Quinn, the guitar player, he's most well-known for 10-Foot Pole.
Right, of course.
Who's, you know, still huge and just played Tall Sound last week.
And John Herzog is also in a really popular band called Swifty.
Yeah, he was.
All in Swifty. I'm going to play a little bit of Swifty.
Okay.
And I'm going to play a little bit of 10-Foot Pole here.
Yeah.
And that was 10-Foot Pole. One of my guest David Butler's selections for local music on this show. If you want to hear that song or any song that you heard tonight in their entirety, just go to our website, 859rewind.com. Who else did you wanted to mention?
Oh, yeah. The drummer in Rebel Without a Cause, he played with a band called Baby Blue. But we had a friend who did sound for us named Bubba, who's kind of a beloved, cantankerous, maybe infamous sound man in town. So originally, Rebel broke up like right before the Rockledge opened. And I was starting Strangle Martin at the time the Rockledge was opening. But years and years later, our friend Bubba passed away, and somebody put on a benefit show in Frankfurt for him called Bubba Fest. So we got back together to play Bubba Fest, and then we just never quit. We had so much fun. We've been playing ever since.
Yeah, and have gained a pretty good following around here, right?
I think so.
Yeah, I saw you guys play at the Oktoberfest, and it was packed. I mean, it was a huge show.
Yeah, we can't take credit for packing that Oktoberfest, but
the crowd was into it.
Yeah,
Rebel is a cover band.
Yes, yeah.
But you've got a show coming up on this Saturday the 18th at the Green Lantern,
and that's a benefit for Mark Hendricks, who unfortunately had a motorcycle accident.
Yeah, I know, what a bummer.
Yeah,
and if anybody knows Mark Hendricks, they knows what a great guy he is. And what an unbelievably great bass player he is. He's a bass player, 9-pound hammer, and they had to go to Europe without him, unfortunately, because he was hit while he was on a motorcycle, hit by a car that ran a red light.
Yeah.
My understanding is he's going to make a full recovery, which is fantastic, but
it's not going to be easy.
It's going to be a long road to recovery. Yeah. He got seriously injured, and our thoughts are all going out to Mark, and we love him. And so the show that you're playing with Tail Dragger on the 18th at the Green Lantern, you're going to raise money for Mark and his family?
Yeah.
Fantastic. That's fantastic. I'll 100% be there. I can't wait.
Great.
Now, you have another project you wanted to mention, Werewolf Terrarium?
Am I saying that right? That's just, a couple years ago, I decided I wanted to start writing songs again. It had been a long time since Strangle Martin. And my daughter went to school and when she was in college, she got a audio engineering degree, and she's a musician. And so she had a recording studio in her basement. So I went and recorded some songs with her and her boyfriend, and they played some of the tracks and produced it and everything. And I've just kind of been sitting on those, meaning to release them, and this is a good excuse to do it.
Awesome. I think that's a great excuse. Can we play a little bit of that right here, too?
Yeah, sure.
All right, Werewolf Terrarium.
I brought you a choice of weapons in case we had to fight. One was a circus souvenir sword complete with a spinning light. We found a spot next to a teamster karaokeist and two cloud-haired fairy peasants who were communists. Your Ukrainian princess is on her Ukrainian love songs and march through.
That's Werewolf Terrarium on the 859 Rewind. Special guest David Butler, former owner of the Rockledge, the front man for Strangle Martin, and just an all-around legend in Lexington music. Dave, thank you so much for joining me for this. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much for inviting me, Lee.
I hope you had a great time.
It was great. It's always great to talk about the old days.
Yeah, right. You know, once we get this show built up for a while, get a big following, we'll have you on again.
Okay.
We'll do it again.
All right.
Talk about everything we forgot to talk about.
I'd be happy to do it.
Awesome. I want to thank Joe Conkright at WUKY for making this podcast happen. Everyone here at WUKY has been very cool to me. And I want to thank Dan Livingston, who made our logo. He's a fantastic graphic designer, and he did it for free when he found out what it was for, because he's a local musician as well. So thanks to Dan Livingston. Remember, every band is a local band somewhere. So go out, support your local music scene, support your local musicians.